From a meeting at the office to a big first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
What about all of the contradictions? Because my God, she has a lot of them. This is a piece I'm working on right now, and it may be out by the time everyone sees this. Let's just start with some of these. Drinking a vodka every 40 minutes. That's the initial statement that she made. Boston Magazine had that in there. And now probably four. I didn't finish all of them is the story now. Very contradictory to what initially was said. And as we know, as time goes by, memory does get a little more cloudy. So why would one believe probably about four to be the accurate number when she was saying every 40 minutes initially? That's a lot of drinks. People, you know, when you're not realizing the volume of what you're being looked at for, you're probably being a little bit more open and honest. And you're saying that, and now, oh, this might work against you, so you better change that story. That's a big one. How is she going to counter some of these, or how is her team going to counter some of these? Obviously, we don't know if she's going to take the stand or not, but these are arguments that certainly could be brought up, at least that one, and there's some more, too. Thoughts on that one first?
Well, ID Discovery, which was the latest, I saw her open her mouth about this. She said six.
Okay.
And she counted them all out, and then... But this is the great thing. We have data that cannot be refuted.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's video. We have receipts.
Mm-hmm.
We literally can see her drinking constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, and to me, this is the biggest one. Of course, the defense is trying to keep this out. We have her blood alcohol level.
Yeah.
That's already been determined. Yes, it was hours later, but she's still under the influence. Even hours later.
Yeah.
So I think that is all just critical because that's scientific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she can say she didn't swallow. She spit it out. I don't know what she's going to come up with.
Yeah.
But you can see her drinking it.
Yeah. It's not disputable. Exactly. Yeah. I didn't inhale. It's kind of her version of that. Last seen O'Keefe at the waterfall bar. Didn't remember dropping him off. And now I dropped him off. He goes up to the driveway and approaches the side door, and she sees him going in. How does that change so dramatically? You don't suddenly get blackout memories back. And if you're so sure that you last saw him at the waterfall or this, like, what? How do you dispute some of these things? These are just major contradictions of key moments in this case.
Well, I think. Personally, my belief is her first statement was accurate, that she really doesn't even remember,
mm-hmm.
and that she's now going back and trying to figure it out. And that's why she says, oh, my God, I think I clipped him. And to me, the most important statement was when she said, I think I might have clipped him. And in his drunkenness, he passed out, but he didn't look mortally wounded.
Yeah.
When she says that, and that's not the dateline. No, that is on the dateline. When she says that to me was what happened, what her memory, what she's recalling.
Yeah. And I've heard that argued both ways. Didn't look mortally wounded, which is a comment you'd really only make if, you know, someone's injured. You're not going to say, oh, we let him off and he took the drink and he didn't look mortally wounded. Well, why would he? He was just leaving your car. Why would there be? Because I've heard that argument. Well, she was saying that when he was leaving. Why would he say that? Why would you say that? It doesn't make any sense unless he's injured or he fell or he slipped or something, or you saw something happen and you decided, I'm just going to go and leave. Yeah. I mean, these are all things that, I mean, I'm trying to remember, were these points even brought up in the first trial? Because they're pretty damning.
No, they weren't. There was a huge issue. So 2020 was the first to really get their hands on Karen Reed.
Yeah.
And first to do the interviews. And remember, in that one, she says a very similar thing. She doesn't use the word clip. She said, I think I could have hit him and he fell. She doesn't talk about mortally wounded. She talks about that in the Dateline. And she just says, and he could have passed out in his drunkenness. So she describes sort of the same scenario. It wasn't used. And this was something we all just could not understand. And what happened was, you have to have the entirety of the information from ABC.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get all of that. So you're not allowed to just take the clips. You have to show the defense the whole thing, obviously, so the defense can argue, well, they redacted out this.
Yeah, sure.
Or they forgot this. And so with this huge fight about all of this, and the bottom line is ABC dug their feet in, right? They don't want all the, you know, information other than what they wanted out there, mm-hmm. So the bottom line is they didn't get everything, so they couldn't introduce anything.
Okay.
And in this one, you know, I'm really hoping, we're going to have the article by Gretchen Voss for the first time. She doesn't have to give up her personal notes,
mm-hmm.
but everything else is coming in on that article and her. Remember last time Gretchen Voss wasn't in either.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen Reed made a lot of damning statements to herself, to Gretchen.
Yeah.
So I think that could be important. You've got the Dateline, you've got the NBC, and remember, she's waived her attorney-client privilege in the ID.
Yeah.
Portion. She's given that up. She's discussing with her attorneys things in that.
So
it's really
all the ID one that can be in too, correct? All of the, I mean, not necessarily murderous statements, but statements to character that just show a cold, callous human being.
Well, statements to character and also inconsistent statements. I mean, can mm-hmm. you imagine if they do what a lot of different creators have done and show the seven statements she's made all back to back to back? It's so damning.
Yeah.
But again, I think they're going to have to get everything. ID Discovery is going to have to turn everything over to them. I haven't seen that litigated.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just agreeing to do it.
Yeah. It makes you wonder exactly what will all take place in this one. This is going to be a very different trial. It's not going to be the same one by any means. I feel like there's going to be a lot of new pieces introduced here. And I don't know that the tides are in her favor anymore. I feel like a lot of people have started to see through this. I know a lot of free Karen Reed people have backed away, and they've kind of seen the light a bit. But at the end of the day, do we still get to a second degree murder? That's the question, because I'm still on the fence with that as well. I don't know that this was a murder that was intended. I still kind of feel like this was an accident. And either she was aware she hit him, was too blackout drunk to be aware, or was just in that drunken state of, oh, he's fine, I'm going to keep me. I don't see this as a vicious, I'm trying to murder him sort of thing. I see it as, I don't want to be accountable in any way, shape, or form, even if I did hit him sort of thing. But I don't know, how are you going to get to, you know, second degree murder on this?
Well, I think this is the question. And this is why, remember, the grand jury initially was just looking at manslaughter.
Yeah.
And then everything changed.
Yeah.
Why did it change? Because if you believe this, that she purposefully threw her car into reverse, which, by the way, they have updated vehicle information, mm-hmm. too, that we didn't have in the first trial. So that's also going to be much more damning, I believe. But if you believe she threw it in reverse and targeted him,
sure.
Whether she meant to kill him or not, any logical person should know that a Lexus SUV, if it hit somebody, could kill them. That's mm-hmm. how they got to second degree. Because I agree with you. I don't think she meant to kill him. I think she meant to hit him and didn't process in her drunkenness that could mean he's going to die.
Mm-hmm. And you see,
because she was drunk.
I don't know that she intended to hit him. What I've always seen in this, and this is just my conjecture, is they're arguing. Obviously, she's angry as hell, as we know from the voicemails. But I could just see the, you know, he's out there. Maybe he's moving. She can kind of see him in the side. This is my conjecture. See him out there, you know, on the road. And one more thing, throw it in reverse. And she wants to shout something at him. And she shouts it and then, you know, tears away without ever actually seeing him or looking at him. And but just shouting it out because she'd be closer to him and then leaves. I don't know that she purposely tried to hit him if she did hit him. That to me just, I don't think she, you know, narcissists are narcissists, but they're not necessarily wanting to put themselves into a murder trial. They want to look like they're the victim. They want to look like they're unaccountable for anything. And then the other person is this, you know, horrible cheater, even though she's the one that's doing it. So that's just, you know, deflection. Just trying to make themselves look good. I don't see where or why she would want to have tried to actually kill him. But I hear what you're saying. In a drunken stupor, you can do dumb things and your brain can go, yeah, just tap him, show it, or whatever. And not realizing the power of what that could actually mean.
Well, and Tony, I love your point because it's actually the point David Jannetty, her attorney, made on the courthouse steps and had and made in court early on, saying she loved him. This was an accident. Mm-hmm. She didn't mean it. She loved him.
Yeah,
that's on record. And I think your argument you just made right now, instead of trying to hurt all these innocent witnesses, mm-hmm. you know, accusing Jen McCabe of murder and, yeah. and Brian Albert. Remember, Higgins, he's still an ATF agent.
Yeah.
He didn't get any time on the bricks, as we call it. He yeah. didn't get in trouble for anything. You believe me, the ATF did their own investigation, mm-hmm. obviously,
yeah.
internal affairs, to make sure he was on the up and up. At nothing. He's still employed. Brian Albert, I believe 33 years as a Boston police officer. He retired a year or two after this. It wasn't like he retired right away. He wasn't forced out. Mm-hmm. It was nothing like that. He retired. He was on television all the time.
Yeah.
Because you don't put a bad officer on TV to represent your agency.
Sure.
This guy was in charge of a fugitive task force. You don't get put in charge of such a high profile where things can go bad.
Mm-hmm.
When you're chasing fugitives, people can get shot. Things can go bad. You need your best guys out there in charge of those
yeah.
operationally. This guy wasn't a mope. Mm-hmm. This guy did the job. And they could stop accusing these people and just fall on the sword and say, oh my gosh, this is not what it appears, and explain a scenario just like you said.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at her behavior, and what I'm starting to look at this as, I mean, obviously, this is about John O'Keefe, without a doubt. This is the man who died. But what we look at in her behavior here from a psychological standpoint, this is just classic narcissism. This is, I mean, again, I don't know if she's ever been diagnosed with that. I can't diagnose anybody. But if you're just looking at this from a 10,000 foot standpoint, this is classic narcissism. And if you look up the term flying monkeys, I know it's from The Wizard of Oz originally, but it's a term that I've said before is used so frequently with these sort of folks, especially if you're a survivor of a narcissist. She's doing exactly this. I mean, she's following the narcissistic playbook to a T of deflect, you know, just say whatever you're going to say. It doesn't matter. You're just going to lie. You're going to make things up, but you kind of believe it because your brain operates that way. And yeah, I mean, look at this. She has her flying monkey. She has her flying monkey ringleader, even. And all these people that are willing to go do your bidding for you. And that's exactly what is happening. This was all turned into because she couldn't take any sort of accountability. Any sort of accountability. Not just, I don't know what happened, but all the way to, we know who did it and these people did it. Really? Really? Like, you're going to go that far? We're going to go like, but they don't care.
because it all goes back to them and they have to have their narrative fulfilled. And her narrative is, I didn't do it, because that's a hard thing to live with and they can never handle any sort of accountability for most things in life. I would bet you look back at Karen Reed's history, again, my conjecture, and you're going to find a plethora of things of people that knew her in her life that could say, oh yeah, she couldn't take accountability for this, for that, for the other thing, and many other things. I'm going to guess this is just how she operates. And you can still see it in the documentaries, how she talks about everything. She, in my opinion, is quite a narcissist. Disorder to that point, I don't know. A doctor can only do that. But certainly she's demonstrated a lot of narcissistic characteristics and she's running through the playbook the whole way through this thing.
Yeah, no, you're exactly on point. I think Tony as well. I mean, look at her latest. Did you see she has a Beauty and the Beast photograph that they are auctioning off? Again, it's just such a money grab to raise hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And she is in the background of the courtroom as quote unquote, I guess, the beauty. And then they have Jen McCabe profile as she leaves.
I did see that. That's what that is.
Yes. It's so, as you said, narcissistic. Again, I always say I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but my gosh, just the way she can. Anybody and everyone to divert from her and to hurt others. It's just sickening to watch.
If you want to,
Cabe did nothing.
No, I mean, if anyone wants to go down a rabbit hole out there, just look up this stuff. Look up narcissistic abuse. Look up narcissistic survivors. Look up flying monkeys, and you will very quickly see a direct correlation to that sort of behavior that narcissists exude to their victims, basically. This is it on a huge scale because a death is involved, but she's operating almost as if it's a breakup where that person's out of her life and she needs to look good, dead or not. And that's what makes it even creepier. Again, I'm not a psychologist. I can't diagnose anyone. I'm just giving my opinion on what I have seen and what my judgment would be based on my own life experiences. A doctor would need to do that, but certainly the behavior does line up in those patterns and it's creepy as shit.
It is. That ID Discovery show, that's the one where I think we saw it the most clearly, because they let her behind the scenes and you know, her guard was down because remember, she says, well, this is my time.
Yeah.
This is my time to get my story out.
And it is. She got her story out. That wasn't a lie. I mean, that's funny. You look back at this and she just, that's the problem with them though. People, when people see through them, they don't think anyone's ever going to see through them. And a lot of times they can just direct their stories to very specific people that they know will take it in and eat it up, like her flying monkeys and Kira Carney and all of the free Karen Reed folks. And you don't get any sort of opposition back. But when you express those sort of opinions to everyone in the world and you have a ton of people who can see through it and see exactly what you're doing, you're going to get called on the carpet for it. And that's what she's finally having happen, but they don't expect that. They don't see that far ahead. They don't think anyone's going to see through them. And that's where this is different with Karen Reed this round. People are seeing through her very well on a mass scale. It'll be very interesting to see what happens here in the trial of Karen Reed part two. I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about in the coming weeks.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.